Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 162. I'm Mel from Metal Hammer. Hello, everybody. Hope you're doing all right out there. And this week we are doing a review roundup where we go through some of the albums in the world of metal that we have missed or not gone into on much depth in recent weeks here on the podcast. And joining me today for our reviews roundup is the one and only Eleanor Goodman, Deputy Editor of Metal Hammer. How are you doing, El?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you guys doing?
I am doing all right. And if you've heard that spoiler, it's because I'm also joined by the one and only Mr. Jonathan Seltzer, reviews editor of Metal Hammer. How are you doing, Seltz?
I'm doing pretty good, actually. Yeah, all right is somewhere between all right and pretty good, yeah.
Good, that'll do. Pretty all right.
Yeah, yeah,
image. Like Sex Pistols B-side. We are doing a ton of albums that we haven't gone into on the recent episodes of the podcast. We've got loads of good stuff, everything from modern thrash to death metal legends to new metal comeback bands, which I'm very excited about indeed. But before all that, I should probably remind you that as well as this podcast and the website and everything else, we do have an excellent monthly magazine for Metal Hammer. And the latest issue is out right now, starring the one and only Gojira, the most important metal band of the decade, no doubt about it. The person I'm joined with right here, Eleanor Goodman, did a brilliant interview with the brothers Duplantier, Joe and Mario, about their fascinating new album Fortitude and how they somehow managed to become the most vital metal band of their generation. It's a really great read, and there's a ton of other great stuff in there now. It's out in shops across the UK. Well, at the moment, you can go and pick it up, which is great. Or if you still want to play it a bit safer and get it delivered directly to your door, you can do that via tinyurl.com/gethammer. It is really good. You will enjoy it, we promise. So we've got a ton of big albums to get through this week. And I feel like we should probably start with maybe the biggest metal release that's come out in the last few weeks that we didn't get into because on the same day, the new While She Sleeps album came out and we decided to go a bit more in depth on that. Cannibal Corpse, of course, have a new album out. Violence Unimagined, out now on Metal Blade Records. The Kings of Death Metal. I kind of feel like with Cannibal Corpse, they're one of those bands that you obviously know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get these chainsaw riffs, guttural vocals from the one and only Corpse Grinder, hooks galore, horrendously gory imagery and lyrical subject matter. I sometimes go to share some of the songs from this album on Instagram, and I have to stop because the kind of accompanying images and animations they've made are literally too violent for me to put on Instagram, and I feel self-conscious about doing it. So it's all the good shit you want from a Cannibal Corpse album. That said, it seems to me like the general consensus is that this is the best thing they've done possibly this side of the millennium. Why do you think that is, Sels? Why do you think people are so hyped on this album?
I
mean, no one ever's down on Cannibal Corpse, but you know what I'm saying.
I actually think Kill is the best album they've done this side of the millennium.
I think Dom actually said it was the best album they've done since Kill. So
yeah, I think it is. For some reason, I don't know why, but I can't really put my finger on it. But I get the same thing with Converge. It's like you kind of know what you're going to get, and why some albums are better to others isn't something you can really put your finger on, but this one they just seem in complete control of what they're doing, and so you just never get tired of it. You get a thrill every time you get a Cannibal Corpse album, and it does a few different things. Like the first song is almost like grindcore. You could almost imagine like Napalm Death. You know, it's got that kind of shunting groove that Napalm Death use, although obviously to very different lyrical effect. And it comes at you from all angles. It's tight as fuck, and it's so much fun, and you feel really accommodated by it because they're so in control of what they're doing, and you can tell they're having a blast, and it's really contagious.
Do you think that Eric Rutan being involved more directly on guitar, obviously he produces Cannibal Corpse a lot, and now he's playing more on the album. Do you think that's had any kind of noticeable effect?
I mean this album sounds really crisp. And you know, that's kind of an element of like Hate Eternal as well too, and it seems a little bit kind of down to essentials a lot more, but that way you can kind of really hear the groove and hear all the different things they're doing, and because they're actually a lot more technical than people tend to give them credit for, and this one is just there's just nothing wasted on it. And, you know, obviously when he's a producer, that really comes, you know, it's different from actually being in the band. You can kind of bring those things in yourself. He's obviously such a great guitarist. So it just seems to have given them a new spring of life, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think this record's fucking great. And
ironically speaking, we're a band all about death, but, you know.
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, yeah, I think the album's fucking great. And it is a weird one because, for me, this is something that we're going to kind of get into with a few of these albums we're reviewing this week. Because for me, Cannibal Corpse are one of those album bands where, you know, they do have such a tight formula and they've just got such a way of doing things which they do so much better than anyone else. And I'm not very likely to kind of go on a, like, I'll listen to one Cannibal Corpse album and be like, that was fucking awesome. And then I'll probably move on to something else. They're not the kind of band I can binge for hours and hours. So I don't know. I feel I'm probably not as educated in their world as someone like Jonathan here is. But when I put this album on, I think maybe as well, because it did come out around the same time as the While She Sleeps album, I was listening to that a lot as well. And I love the Sleeps album, but for just pure no-nonsense, face-ripping, extreme metal, I mean, it doesn't really get better than this. And it does sound, it sounds fucking colossal in some parts as well. I mean, some of the riffs that this band put together are just ridiculous.
Yeah, it just, it sounds like they're doing something to you from all different angles, like they're coming in at you from all different angles in some of the songs. And it is just, like, really fun all the way through. And you don't feel when you listen to it, like, it's another Cannibal Corpse album. You go, yes, it's another fucking Cannibal Corpse album all the way through. And, yeah, just the quality just shines through. And, you know, but they still have very much their own personality. You can always tell it's a Cannibal Corpse record. Rather than any other band. I think that's really important as well.
I don't know if it helps that, I mean, more now so than ever, that Quartz Grinder seems to have just become like the most beloved metal personality on the internet in the last few weeks. Like, our online editor, Dave Everly, did this awesome interview with him where he talked about his, like, stuffed toy. It's not even really a collection. He, like, goes around grabber machines winning stuffed toys and then donates them to, like, children's charities and things like that. He had that famous meeting with Cher at his house that's come into the spotlight recently because of Cher's son being a deadzy and all this kind of stuff. I don't know, I guess it just feels like everyone's like, yeah, kind of like you said, like, fuck yeah, Cannibal Corpse. Everyone's just really high on Cannibal Corpse at the moment, and this album's just coming like at such a great time. And it's just, I don't know, you just can't fuck with the masters, I guess.
I mean, I think it's always been the way. I remember when they played at Bloodstock, and they did they were early on Sunday, on the Sunday at Bloodstock, and it was like we all called it like the Sunday service, and we all got up early and got to site, and it was just this complete sense of celebration watching Cannibal Corpse. And you just know that you're in the hands of masters. They're not chancers. They're not trying to do something that and quite failing at it. You know, they're just something really cool to experience as a metal fan.
It's really weird that like a band that has song titles like I Come Blood have become like one of the wholesome sides of the heavy metal.
They're kind of at a certain level of absurdity where the normal laws of physics don't really exist.
I think so, definitely. Yeah, it's a fucking killer album. I mean, the thing is, anyone that's probably already listened to Cannibal Corpse and is a Cannibal Corpse fan has probably been spinning the absolute shit out of this record already for the last few weeks. But for the record, yes, we are with everybody else. It rules. If you haven't read... who wrote it? Was it? Yeah, it was Alex Chillingworth. If you haven't read Alex Chillingworth's excellent in-depth review on the Metal Hammer website, you can go and check that out as well if you want some other perspectives on it. But yeah, fuck yeah, Cannibal Corpse is very much the position of everyone at Metal Hammer for this new album. It's weird because we're kind of talking about a band just doing, you know, having a formula, sticking to the formula. And sometimes you go all the way with it and sometimes it kind of just is what it is. And I feel like the next album we're going to review is kind of more of that. I guess the difference is that Cannibal Corpse have helped to kind of define death metal. Whereas the next band we're going to talk about are a band that helped to kind of, I guess, revive a lot of interest in their genre, in this case, thrash. We're talking about Evil, who just on Friday, I think, put out the album Hell Unleashed. Out on Napalm Records right now as well. There's obviously quite a lot of story around this Evil album, and to be honest, for a band that you know play thrash metal and maybe haven't done as much to, you know, change the boundaries of heavy metal as others. They've still had a very storied career. And this is the first Evil album in 8 years, which just seems insane to me, because I swear the last one was yesterday, but obviously not. But also, this is the first album with Old Drake on vocals. Old's often been the kind of driving force behind Evil. He was in many ways one of the big personalities in the band. Traditionally, the lead guitarist, of course. And up to this album, they'd had Matt Drake on vocals, and he's now departed. And now you've got Old on vocals. And aside from that, which I guess we'll get to his vocals in a second, first Evil album in 8 years. Kind of what you'd expect from an Evil album, whether it was now or 8 years ago, is that fair to say?
Yeah, we actually did a feature talking to Ol in the new issue of Metal Hammer, and he was saying that that was by design, because he was talking about how metal fans don't really trust bands when they change their singer. They don't like change very much. So having someone from inside the band taking on that role made a lot of sense to them, and it was something that he enjoyed doing as well. And that they have kind of almost written to a formula, because people want another Evil album. It's the first one in 8 years, and they want to hear Evil. They don't want to hear some kind of, I mean, I'm extrapolating from what he said here, but if you put on an Evil record, you want to hear an Evil record. You want to hear thrash. You want to hear thrash for the new century, which is what they were. And like you said, then we've got this addition of Ol being somebody who's inside the band, but he's also bringing something a bit new to it with his vocals as well. It's got a harder edge than his brother Matt had. And so it does actually bring a different sort of vibe to it. But in terms of the instrumentation and the lyrics, it's, you know, they're sort of covering the zombie apocalypse, the thing. It's all very, very thrash. It's what you'd expect from Evil and from a thrash metal album.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because they kind of... it's weird, because since Evil first came along, they first came along in what, like 2005 or something, and then maybe it's a bit later than that actually. I'm probably thinking of Municipal Waste and all those guys, but when the kind of thrash revival first came along, it was in the kind of like mid to late 2000s, and you know, at that point, you know, Megadeth had been in a bit of a funny place for a while. They were kind of getting back on form. Obviously Testament had a bit of a weird situation with Chuck. Metallica had been, you know, all over the place in some ways, and so like when those kind of younger thrash bands all burst onto the scene, they felt like a really exciting, vibrant, fun kind of recapturing of what thrash metal was all about. And I'm not doing a disservice to the many other great thrash bands who have been, you know, putting out great material in the meantime, but it definitely felt like the genre as a whole had kind of been injected with a sense of youth and vibrancy that it hadn't in some time. And then Evil kind of emerged from all that as, you know, the great hopes for certainly for British thrash in that whole scene. And, you know, it never quite worked out for them, and they never really capitalized, through no fault of their own necessarily, they were never really capitalized on that momentum that they had kind of around, I guess, 2010 onwards. But that all said, if you want just fucking great modern thrash metal written really, really well, I mean, Ol's riffs are just face-tearingly good. There's hooks all over the place. These songs are catchy. They're fast. They're heavy. Yeah, like you said, Ol, lyrically, they're just right on the money for what thrash metal's all about. You know, this is great shit. This is really, really good shit. And I find Ol's vocals really interesting, because Matt always had a kind of like Tom Araya meets Chuck Billy vibe going on. So it was very, like, it was brilliantly executed, but it was very much like, oh yeah, this is like thrash 101 vocals, we've heard this kind of thing before. Whereas like you said, Ol's got more of this kind of gruffer, growlier thing going on, and it does give the songs a slightly different edge, which is quite interesting.
I was trying to think of like what you call that vocal style that you just described. I was like, is it a shouty sing? Like, what's it called? You know it when you hear it, and you know it's associated with thrash, but it doesn't have a name, does it? Does it have a name?
It probably does. I'm sure someone like Dom Lawson will just be like, yes, it's blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's that kind of like the shouty, screamy, growly thing. The Tom Araya school of vocals. And I mean, yeah, I think Hell Unleashed is a fucking good album. I really, really do. I think for me personally, and I know there's probably some old school thrashers that would disagree with me, I think the biggest problem facing these kind of bands is that, A, they're not the Metallicas and Megadeths and Testaments of the world, where their kind of status in the metal scene carries their music forward and just generates that extra level of interest and excitement in them. And also, when it comes to kind of younger slash modern thrash bands, we do live in a post-Nightmare Logic world now. And I think Power Trip raised the bar so high for what you can do with thrash and crossover metal in terms of sticking true to its roots, but making it sound urgent and modern and cutting edge and exciting as fuck. I think everything else around that just pales in comparison. I really, really do. And which probably isn't totally fair on Evil, because they're not quite from the same place as bands like Patrick. Patrick come from a slightly more hardcore bent, and, you know, Evil are much more just straight up thrash speed metal. But I don't know, I just feel like the game has changed in that regard, and that probably isn't helpful for bands like Evil that, you know, very loudly and proudly stick to a more old school template. But that's not a knock on the album itself. I think Hell Unleashed is really, really good. And if for some reason you're a big thrash metal fan and you've overlooked this album, this will absolutely scratch that itch if you haven't heard enough great thrash metal this year.
Yeah, I always thought the better bands, the current modern bands, were the thrash ever ones like Power Trip and Municipal Waste, because the punk element gives you that urgency. And, you know, thrash was so much of its time. Like, it was talking about things like nuclear war and everything. That was so much of the 80s. And if you're just going to stick to doing zombies and everything else, like, not that Municipal Waste don't do that, but they, you know, they try to go political as well too. But also, you know, the American bands have an advantage in that they can be much less self-conscious, because thrash is basically saying dude. It's a musical genre of saying dude, and British people can't say dude and get away with it.
So good. I was thinking the same, like, there's an American confidence which comes with those American bands. It isn't just...
It's an American lack of self-consciousness and a kind of a craziness that other bands, the original German bands, they had that kind of really dirty, crazy sound. Bands like Necromanthian, who are my favourite thrash band around at the moment, over the last few years, have got slightly black and old school creator sound. And there's a general sort of glint in the eye craziness that they've got that I don't really feel in Evil, and it's hard for British bands to get unless you're really incensed about what's going on around you. And, you know, it's been hard for British thrash bands to kind of get that edge to them. I mean, I still love Onslaught, and they were like a very, you know, they had a very British sound. Obviously, it's about, you know, it came from very British, and they were talking about their experiences in a slightly more sort of mystical way. And I think bands like Evil are at a bit of a disadvantage, because they just don't have that complete lack of self-consciousness, especially when you're so obviously doing slayery riffs, and it's not something from your own kind of, from the thing that you've grown up with in your own country a little bit, you know, whereas in America, you know, the bands would bounce off each other, they'd go off and do their own things, and there'd be that level of competition, and they talk about their immediate environment. And I think Evil are lacking that aspect of them that will put them like onto the next level.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I never thought of that. I mean, that's one of the things that I've always liked about Gamma Bomb, who are obviously Northern Irish rather than kind of, you know, English or mainland British. But they've always had that kind of fun, slightly berserk kind of like underlying point to them. And Philly is such a kind of erudite and interesting and, you know, provocative guy. Provocative is probably not the right word. Thought-provoking guy, that it kind of adds that extra layer to their sound. Yeah, and their whole being.
Yeah, it's really hard to play as if you sound like you're just about to go off the rails, but you're not. But that's what you need to play really good thrash.
I feel like British thrash is more matey. It just comes from that more British place, whereas American thrash is more performing. Is that the right word? Performative? Not performative, because they are doing something they believe in, but it comes from a place that's just a bit more showy, a bit more kind of making a performance into a performance. It just does feel different.
Yeah, I mean, like, Municipal Waste gigs feel like real parties. When they play Download, it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, even now, like, you know, I don't even know when the last time Municipal Waste released an album or what that band's status is right now. But if I see that band playing a tent at a festival, I will always think about going to see it, because you just know it's going to be absolutely bananas. But, you know, I do think this Evil album's really, really strong for what it is. And I think, you know, because they are a British band and they were that kind of like great British thrash hope at one point, I still think there's a lot of love for this band, and I'm looking forward to seeing where this album could take them. And I think with everything they've kind of suffered through, with the loss of Mike, and there's kind of lineup changes and the kind of, you know, the just is not quite coming together for them like everyone thought they would. You know, I'm glad that Ole's come back to the fold and he's kind of taking control of the whole thing again, and they've managed to put out a really decent album at the end of it. So it's a thumbs up from me, but you know, the world with bands like Powertrip in it, I do think bands of this particular generation of thrash do find themselves in the shade a little bit, maybe. Let's go on to something different. How about we do the Grave Miasma album? That's a Jonathan special. He picked this straight out when we said we're going to review some stuff. So this album is called Abyss of Wrathful Deities. It's not out quite yet. It's out imminently. It's out on May. Okay, cool. It's out on Sepulchral Voice Records. And I didn't realise that this band were from London. I've heard their name around the scene for years and years, and I didn't actually realise that they were Londoners.
So it's two brothers and another guy. It's Danny and Yoni Ben-Hayim. And I often see him around at the Black Heart. And I see him at gigs, and I see him at non-metal gigs as well, too. Like, I saw them at Loop gig. The band have been going for 19 years, and you wouldn't think of it to look at them, because they still look really young. And you can tell that these two brothers have got a bond. They were kind of like the sort of the occult death metal wave that didn't start a few years back when Fenriz was going on about Titan Blood, the Madrid band. But, you know, it's this death metal, complete sort of kind of chaotic with lots of reverb on the vocals. And that got everyone really back interested in this kind of really archaic old school death metal sound. And they are one of the best. I mean, I love all of it, to be honest, but they are one of the best of the bunch. Whenever I see them live, there's always a moment. It's what I always look for in a gig, where I don't know where I am anymore. And the records never let you down. And this one's slightly different. And you can tell, like, they're trying to move away from the whole occult death metal sound, if not theme, because there's a bit less reverb. It's a bit more into classic old school death metal. And I think, as much as I love reverb on vocals and thrash and death metal, I think this really works the favour, because it shows you what an amazing death metal band they are. And on top of which, it's just like, and you can really sense in the vocals and the way they play, like the level of commitment in it, how they're always just pushing, you know, almost like the membrane of reality to get to the next place. And so it just proves once more that it's not just about atmosphere, although that's really important, because you can't fake that. But they're amazing death metal riffs. And I think if you find this whole thing a little bit too daunting, which I don't think it should be, because to me it's just metal. It's just really great metal. But if you found that stuff a bit daunting, this is kind of a slightly easier way to get into it. And just you know, the riffs are really catchy. It's just absolutely driven with pure conviction, and it does have an atmosphere that, like I said, you can't just put an echo on something and create an atmosphere. It's got to come from within. You can really sense it comes from within on this record.
Awesome. So would you say this is the album, so kind of, because this is only, they've been around 19 years, like you said, but this is only
their second album.
Second full-length album, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they take their time stewing this from the ether and, you know, stirring it till it's like, you know, the right amount of thickness and viscosity and potency. Sorry. I don't know what I'm on today. Sorry,
that's starting to sound like a death metal lyric.
Yeah,
I love it when you start describing things in such a Jonathan way, and you just go off into your own mind for a bit. It's great.
Yeah, and he's back. So, are we recording? I don't know where I am. Yeah, but they are worth the wait, and. I wasn't quite as into this initially because I missed the you know, the extra level of reverb and the extra kind of level of chaos and miasma that the Grave Miasma records have. So they're well named, but then I listened to it again. It's just like, oh my god, this is like such a great death metal record.
Yeah, no, it's great. I've been listening to it a bit since you recommended it, and there's some really, really cool shit on here. And I agree, it feels like an album that if someone is a bit you know, unsure about how to kind of broach into extreme metal, like, I think this is the kind of record that can just draw you in, because like you said, like, a lot of this stuff on a completely different bent, but, you know, same stuff with like Cannibal Corpse, same when we were talking about The Crown a few weeks ago. Like, it's just great heavy metal, just done in a very, you know, specific and different line through.
But you have to understand that all the bands are, you know, at the far end of this, like, you know, your Negative Planes or your Titan Bloods, I mean, they're all completely schooled on old school death metal. You know, this stuff is just, it's, you know, the idea of death metal is kind of written into their DNA. And so it's all in there. It just might, you know, for some people it might feel like it's a bit more obscured. And if you listen to like the first Titan Blood record, you're just like, what the hell? But it's such an ecstatic experience of just like, just being in a it's like being put into a centrifuge. And, you know, that's also what Grave Marasma kind of feel like as well too, this kind of unholy centrifuge where all these like evil spirits are, like swirling around. And yeah, I'm going off on one again. Sorry.
please do. Look, if people aren't sold on this, then there's no help. But yeah, it's a fucking cool album. It's called Abyss of Wrathful Deities, and it's out, I think it's out next Friday, isn't it? The 14th of May.
By
Grave Miasma. Really cool band.
And go and see them live if you get the chance. They played on Desert Fest, the last physical Desert Fest we had. I think it was the last one.
Awesome. Well, hopefully this will, as it's, you know, a rare album for them, hopefully it will give them some, you know, a bit of a push to go and tour some more and play some shows. I would like to see them too.
Yeah, it's an experience.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, the next album we're going to review, this is where I probably will end up being a bit of a hypocrite, because, like, we've kind of talked about how, like, you know, Cannibal Corpse do death metal and they do it well, and if you like it, that's fine. And then we kind of talked about Evil and they just do thrash, and maybe we sounded a little disparaging about that in some ways, because it's just like, well, you know, it's thrash metal, there's not a lot you can do with it. Now the next album we're going to do is the Tetrarch album, and this album is about as derivative as you can get in 2021, really. But fuck me, I absolutely love it. The album is called Unstable. It's out now via Napalm. This is a four-piece from Atlanta. It's their second album. Their debut album, Freak, was out in 2017. And basically, we've heard a lot about the kind of, you know, the return of new metal's back. We're seeing bands like Tala and other ones who I've forgotten. And we're seeing kind of like new metal fashion kind of getting into high street stores, and there's kind of reappraisals of bands like Limp Bizkit and everything else across, you know, TikTok, where Papa Roach are going viral again and all this stuff. Like, there aren't that many new bands really that have come out that are kind of shamelessly plundering new metal to the extent where you can say they're a new metal band. There's no other way to describe it. And Tetrarch are absolutely that band. And I was listening back to the first album earlier today, and there's still a lot of that new metal stuff on there, but I think a lot of it is more funneled into a bit of a modern metal kind of slant. I think they've just embraced the new metal nostalgia on this band. And what I find so interesting about them is, you know, this is a young band, they're young kids, and a lot of the bands that kind of I reference when I listen to this, I don't know even if those would have been the bands that they were necessarily kind of breaking when these guys was kind of getting into music in the first time. So what drew them to make this kind of music fascinates me. But anyway, they're a fucking new metal band, and if you basically imagine every great one-hit wonder of the new metal generation, your Ademas and your Taproots and your Union Undergrounds and all that lot, imagine one of them actually managed to make and go a fucking brilliant album. That's basically what this sounds like. I think it's absolutely great, and yeah, I think Elle agrees with me.
I'm obsessed with this record. You just have to get past the fact that it rips off new metal bands. Like, you literally just have to. The first time I heard them, their PR sent them over, and I was like, this is just new metal. And then we ended up doing a feature online, which was about the resurgence of new metal, bringing in some of those bands that Mill just mentioned, and putting Tetrarch in there as well. And we just thought, oh, we'll just kind of see where this goes. It's kind of interesting. And then I heard this record, and I was like, yeah, it's just ripping off new metal still. But this record is so catchy. It literally just connects with all those bits in your brain. I've gone a bit Jonathan. All those bits in your brain that just love a hook. And every bit of your brain, if you're a new metal fan, it will just reconnect all those little new metal bits. And there's almost like a song for every new metal band on this record as well.
Yeah.
The opener,
just rack
I'm not,
them off.
Yeah. The opener, I'm Not Right, is pure Korn. It's just a Korn song. Negative Noise is massively
Slipknot.
Slipknot.
So Slipknot.
You Never Listen. Yeah. It's pretty edema.
Yeah, the drums on the second track is just like Slipknot should sue. Because it's just
but
it's so shameless.
Diamond, their guitarist, is obviously really into Slipknot, and she had a little exchange with Jim Root on Instagram, and he said that he thought her playing was really cool, and they had a little back and forth. So that was really nice, because bands like Slipknot are then giving a nod to the next generation. And in the grand scheme of things and in art, everyone takes from everyone. And yes, this is massively shameless, but they have taken all these elements and made an album that is so catchy and so fun that you just can't be angry about it. You can't be bothered.
I think
about
that's what it is.
I didn't feel it was fun. I mean, I actually couldn't get through to the end of it. End of the album.
It's not really. Right, well,
hold on, Jonathan, for a second, because we're just getting started. You can come in and piss on our cornflakes.
I'll come and piss on your chips in a bit.
So, yeah, Sick of You is quite Disturbed. There is some kind of contemporary influence as well. Like, it's very well produced and it's very slick, and it just kind of have that modern production. And there's songs like Take a Look Inside that have, the opening is quite like Gojira-esque. So there is some modernity on here as well. And then they've got this song Trust Me, which does that really vulnerable kind of thing that Jonathan Davis pioneered. Diamond, the guitarist who I mentioned, her and Josh met in middle school and became friends. And actually, Mel, you're talking about their influences, and they were into more like classic thrash. And then somehow they got into new metal and decided to be a new metal band. And they talked a little bit about how people said they wouldn't go anywhere and there was no point in doing this kind of music. And they were kind of like, well, this is what we love, so fuck it, we'll do it. And they've got presence as well. It's not just that they've got these big polished songs. They've got real kind of presence about them too. I think when you see the way they present themselves, even in things like their band photographs, you know, we get a lot of pictures of bands looking sort of fairly apathetic, and they've got these like death stares in the pictures, and I mean that in a complimentary way. They're sort of really staring down the lens and sort of challenging you to listen to the music almost. And they've got a lot more life than a lot of bands I've seen who are trying to do this kind of thing, and the drive is really, really impressive. So I think just as a whole package, they're a really impressive band. You just have to get over the fact that they have done a shameless thing and just go, this is fun, I'm gonna enjoy it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, I agree. There are kind of elements of modern stuff creeping in there. I mean, you know, Diamond Row does get to kind of peel off a couple of solos here and there and things like that, which obviously isn't a big new metal thing, really. Yeah. But it's funny because you said I'm Not Right sounds like Korn and Unstable sounds like Edema. And I wrote that I'm Not Right sounds like Edema and Unstable sounds like Korn. So it's like... It's such kind of glaringly obvious influences in here. Not just musically, but...
Edema was Jonathan Davis's brother, so there was a lot of cross-pollination there. Edema were the sort of more melodic. They were like Korn Light at the time.
They were, yeah, but The Way You Like It, what a banger.
Love that song.
And Josh's vocals are kind of perfect. There's kind of music that kind of this snarling, sneering delivery. He does a couple of totally Jonathan Davis... kind of vocal lines, like the bit on You Never Listen when he goes, I won't listen to you anymore. Like, it's just,
love
it's so
bit.
Cool.
Love that
and
bit.
It's,
so
it's all the stuff. It's all the stuff that I know people like Jonathan particularly hate. It's all kind of like, you know, self-hating. Like, even the song titles, like, I'm Not Right, Unstable, You Never Listen. It's all kind of like, you know, in that vibe. Although there is kind of a big... there's a lot of kind of horror-y storylines that run through a lot of what they do as well, of course, which is quite cool. But
I'm not,
you know,
anti-negativity per se.
No, I know, but you can't stand that kind of... It's that self-pitying thing that you can't stand, which I get.
Yeah, so, I mean, listen, I'll say that I think it's really professionally done, but all it does is that that's a clear window through which you can see all its faults more clearly. So, like... I couldn't listen to it all the way through because I couldn't experience the album as a thing in itself, because all I could think of is, oh my god, this sounds like this, this sounds like this, this sounds like this. That's all that was going on in my head.
Yeah, but you have to they have to get over that. That's what I had at the beginning. I don't care.
It was,
you go, it's really good, actually.
Yeah, it wasn't even, but it doesn't really feel like it's even been done knowingly, with a little bit of a wink in the eye, because like you said, you know,
I know what you mean by that.
It's so whiny, like, you know, talent borrows genius still. They've just kind of nicked stuff. And so for me, it feels like a really good algorithm. Like, it's just basically, it's just, you know, someone's actually written a really good algorithm that they just fed new metal through. And because it is like really professionally and really well done, I just feel like that I wonder about the internal personality of the record, because it feels like these are the emotions that go with this kind of music, and I didn't really feel like any really internal life on its own with the record, and I found the whininess just got a bit much. That's another reason why I couldn't really get through it. The one really heavy song they've got, but it's not heavy all the way through, is Take a Look Inside. And yeah, I, you know, and that actually feels like, oh my god, they actually listen to death metal. And you can hear the hints of Gojira in that bit, but then it goes really weak, then it goes like really clean again, and it's just like it loses that kind of edge that it's got. But yeah, it's not really about whether I like or don't like new metal, because some of it I really liked, and I always thought, you know, the really amazing thing about new metal, especially Korn and Slipknot to an extent, was that they're really revolutionary in the rhythm sections. And then when you had all these bands coming out at the time, they were all doing, like when every great scene starts, when every band is kind of doing their own thing and bouncing off each other, but every band's got their own thing. And this is just a conglomeration of every band's own thing without it being its own thing. And I just don't see the point of it. It just feels like something warmed up and cooked together, and I don't know, I don't see the point of it, and I didn't find it fun as a listening experience.
I feel like something you said was really interesting. You said something like, it doesn't have a knowing wink, or it's not knowing, something like that. And
if that's Seamus, you have to be a little bit knowing about it, and just it lets you off the hook a lot more, and it also makes the things a lot more fun.
But I don't always think it works, because by being knowing, it can sometimes be mocking. And there's been a lot of stuff in recent years that has borrowed the sounds of new metal and has been knowing. But then if it tips over into the realm of mocking, I don't know, as somebody who just really loves new metal, and I've not made any secret about that, when people kind of make fun of it, I'm like, yeah, I get it. Like, there were some stupid lyrics and some self-pity and some misogyny, and everyone wore stupid trousers. But there's something at the core of it that was people expressing themselves. And like you said about Korn being revolutionary in their rhythms, like Jonathan Davis was pretty revolutionary in the way he was presenting himself, and the fact that he was talking about a lot of vulnerable things as a grown man in a world where people didn't really do that. And I kind of like the fact that they just unashamedly like it and they play it, rather than having to make it a knowing thing, or rather than having to do anything like
that. No, what
not necessarily what you're suggesting, but I think there is positivity there, is what I'm saying. I think they do like these bands, and it's a homage. And maybe I'm interested to see what they'll do for their next record, like if they'll kind of carry on with this, or whether there'll be something that you hear and you go, that is more Tetrarch than something else, or this is very Tetrarch. Because at the moment, because they're such a new band, it's just kind of this style they've done where you're like, oh, I enjoy it because it reminds me of stuff I like. But yeah, I think they'll grow into having more of their own thing in time, probably.
Yeah. Well, what I mean is knowing is, like, you know, like, say, Ghost are kind of quite knowing, but you can tell they love, King Diamond, and you know they love Blue Oyster Cult. And, you know, they're, and that gives you, and that sort of awareness of the whole process of influence gives you a lot more way to kind of bring something out of it. Like I'll give you a slightly completely left field example of the complete wrong way of knowing. Like, the one the film I hate more than any other film in the world is actually Dancer in the Dark by Lars von Trier, you know, the one with Björk. Like, I hate it with an absolute raging passion. But one of the reasons why I hate it is it's a musical, and he absolutely hates musicals. you can tell that Lars von Trier hates musicals, and I think that's done in really... I just think a lot of Lars von Trier's films are done in really, really bad faith. And so if you're going to do, when I say knowing and you don't actually like and you're mocking the thing you like, that's bad faith, and that's not something that I'm very pro.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They are obviously aware of nu metal and they talk about nu metal all the time. I don't think they're hiding the fact they're influenced by nu metal, but I like the fact that it's not making fun of it.
I mean, sometimes like a caricature isn't mocking it, it's just like it's bringing out the wonder of something. And just making something, highlighting it and making it more neon glow. And I just don't get an extra level of love of Korn or Slipknot through listening to this record.
I do know what you mean with a lot of that, Jonathan. I mean, the Slipknot song is the one that always sticks out for me because everything else, I mean, you know, there's a track on there where Josh starts singing a bit like David Draver from Disturbed, and that feels a bit shameless in its own right. But most of their general sound still is kind of within, you know, if you're going to pick bands that they sound like, you'd probably pick like Korn, a little bit of Linkin Park, a little bit of Edema. Like, but that Slipknot track, as good as it is, the negative Noise it's called, it does stick out because it doesn't really sound like most of the other songs on there, and it sounds so much like Slipknot that you can almost hear someone in the band going, or someone around them or something like that going, we should do a Slipknot song, rather than just writing songs and going, oh, this one sounds a bit like Slipknot. Like, it's so kind of obvious that I do wonder if someone in the band or someone around them or some things happen where someone's gone, oh, we should do a Slipknot song. Oh, and we should do a song where you sing like David Jones from Disturbed, because it's so kind of, it is so shameless that you just think, well, he can't have just kind of happened to have done his voice in a certain. It's like when, you know, Trivium got produced by David Draiman, and then suddenly Matt Heavey was going, oh, da, 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 da. It's like, it can't be a coincidence. They must kind of know what they're doing. But the big caveat to that is that it's done so fucking well. And like, if this was a nu metal album that was released in, you know, 2001, it would probably have gone down as like one of the great albums of that whole movement. So I don't know, like,
it's like they perfected deep fakes.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, they do genuinely love the art form, and like, you know, they lean into it enough where, like, I think they're, you know, I don't think they're a bunch of people who just don't like nu metal and have decided to make a nu metal album. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there's this phrase called the crisis of influence, where it's just like, yeah, but you love the thing, but you also want to hate them because you want to be better than them, you want to take it further on. And I just don't feel that sense of crisis of influence as like a kind of a creative force within this record.
I do get that, and I think a lot of it really does come down to, you know, what band you grew up with, what band you happen to be into, because, you know, I could, everything that I find uninspired about a band like Evile, I love about Tetrarch. And the only reason for that is because they're so earnest about it. They completely tap into what I felt like when I was like 14 years old listening to all those bands, and they do it so well. And like,
yeah, know, I mean, I'm going to destroy my own argument, because like, I love a lot of kind of really old school death and black metal bands that just totally, but maybe it's a different kind of thing, but you know, it just totally hewed to the original formula. But maybe because for me, I just find there's something much more potent about that, and that that kind of music for me is much more foundational, that you need to have that as a kind of like a North Star from which to guide everything else. So you need bands to go back and do that thing as a North Star, so other bands can experiment and still have that, you know, core to where they came from. You know, the umbilical cord to where they came from. You need both sides of the argument. But for me, maybe nu metal is not quite such a foundational text as in the way that old school death metal is.
It's again because nu metal created such clear, distinctive bands and such kind of clear caricatures. Like, you can't do it. If you've got a song that sounds like Korn and a song that sounds like Disturbed and a song like sound like Slipknot, they're just such clearly defined bands. They don't even really all sound like each other for the most part.
Yeah, but all scenes at the beginning, you know, that, you know, that's great. Like the old school death metal scene, the thrash scene, the new metal scene, was that they all had their own sounds, as I said. And you know, that's kind of the thrill. And then they, and then, you know, they tend to be like kind of, you know, the next wave, it just, it tends to be just a bit more the same kind of thing, and you get a bit less personality because they're trying to recreate what was there without the kind of the thrill of creating something new. And also, you know, Slipknot probably loved a lot of kind of death metal bands, and they were listening to a lot of death metal bands that maybe not, I don't know, Tetrarch maybe not have listened to. So if your ground zero is new metal, but new metal's ground zero wasn't new metal, you know what I mean? It's just
but isn't that how things evolve and change? Like, there are so many artists that haven't heard the artist before them, but those artists heard the artist before them.
No, that's how things go to shit.
I think my attitude to that is that it's okay to say that bands have to know the absolute roots of everything they do, as long as everyone saying that knows every single thing that's happening right now. Like, because if you're a 20-year-old and you're playing guitar, you literally have hundreds times more bands to kind of reference than the people doing that in the first place did. If you are Diamond Row, you've got so much more stuff to kind of digest than, you know, fucking James Hetfield did. You just do. You've got 40 more years of stuff to kind of pack in. So it's kind of easy to say that whole, like, oh, you have to know, you have to respect the genre's roots and stuff, but, like, you know, that's a very wide thing to do now compared to what it was doing 20, 30 years ago. And also, you know, young music fans, I don't know if Tetrarch quite fall under this because I don't know how old they all are exactly, but young music fans now are hearing everything at all times. Like, you know, they're hearing Paranoid by Black Sabbath at the same time that they're hearing Rolling by Limp Bizkit, at the same time they're hearing, like, Poppy, and they're hearing all these things at once because it's all coming at them at the same time for streaming, and that completely rewires the way you engage with music, because Black Sabbath isn't this old thing that was happening there ago. It's now. It's happening now because it's here. It's accessible. So it's, you know, it's a weird old time. And I don't know if Tetrarch are the best band to hinge that argument on, because they have just done a derivative new metal album. They've not pushed the boat out doing all that, but, you know, there was a point in there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm a bit more old school, but I just, you know, I just kind of worry about things becoming, like, very relativist, where everything means exactly the same as everything else, and then nothing means anything. So
I think that's
like
true,
like,
as well.
Like I said, I just represent one sort of part of the spectrum, and I understand there's other parts of the spectrum. I just think we need to have all parts of the spectrum, and we all need to be engaged with each other.
I think your critical opinions are really solid, and I would probably agree with them more if I hadn't grown up with new metal. It's kind of that point that Merle said about, if you love it and if that's your kind of ground zero, like, that was how I got into metal, it's gonna hit those points where it just makes you feel something. And I think it's really hard to divorce yourself from that into the greater world of criticism if that's just how you feel.
Think it's like, basically, I think we've got one more album that we're quickly going to talk about in a minute as well, but I think this review show has been a really good kind of advert for if you like
Clash of Generations.
Well, no, not even that. I was going to say, like, sometimes
Jonathan.
Sometimes metal is about just, like, doing what you like really well, and if other people like that thing particularly, they will like
it's it. A bonus.
Yeah, because you've got Cannibal Corpse. I mean, Cannibal Corpse is a bit different because they kind of helped to define death metal, didn't they? But you've got Cannibal Corpse doing Cannibal Corpse, you've got Evil doing just thrash, and then you've got Tetrarch just doing new metal, and where you decide to engage with that, you probably already know. So
Jonathan,
if you like new metal, you will love Tetrarch. They are fucking great for what they do.
Jonathan just snuck in a little music journalism joke then and made himself cry with laughter.
Well, let's get this back on track. On a completely different bed, Jonathan, let's spend a couple of minutes talking about Dor Da Dur, who I literally had not heard of. And I listened to this album after Jonathan suggested it, and I find it absolutely fascinating.
Same. I hadn't heard of them, and now I think I'm going to get obsessed with them.
Yeah, I'm completely in love. It's one of my three, probably going to be one of the three favorite records this year out of all the ones I've heard or yet to come out. So it's two main guys, Hubba Grammas and Soul Fower. They used to be in Nagura Bunge, a Romanian black metal band, created the greatest black metal record of the noughties of this decade so far, as I'm concerned. called Om. They split into two different factions. One kept the name. Hippogrammus was a founding member of Nehru Bunja along with Nehru. Nehru, they had a massive falling out, completely irrevocable. Split into two bands. Nehru kept the name Nehru Bunja. Hippogrammus went on to form Dor De Deux. And they kind of came back, they kind of came out at the same time, which has been about, which would have been 2010.
Just to quickly say, Jonathan, we should probably spell Dor De Deux because I could definitely see a lot of people
trying to find them.
Sorry,
Dordeduh. There's a special meaning to the name, but also like with a lot of Nehru Bunja albums, titles, and the first Dor De Deux album is called Dor De Deux, and then this one's called Ha. So there's a lot of kind of emphasis on the and there's a Nehru Bunja album called Om. So there's a lot of emphasis on the phonetics. But anyway, this is their first album. They put out the first album 9 years ago. Didn't hear anything from them. I'd occasionally bump into Hippogrammus or Edmund because he was doing sound teching for bands. And so when's the next Dor De Deux album coming out? Oh, we'll get there. I've got family and stuff. And it came in and did this. And it's just, so it's got elements of Nehru Bunja in it, in the sense that it's got this humongous cinematic scope. On top of which, like with Nehru Bunja and with Dor De Deux as well too, they were using like ancient traditional instruments, like long before, you know, before your Vajrunas and your Highlands, they were using sort of hammered dulcimers, not that ancient, but like hammered wooden blocks, lots of really strange like wind instruments, and they created this beautiful scintillating music, and they just got more and more progressive, like until up to the point of Om, which is just an absolute glorious record, and then they split into two bands, and like so the first Dor De Deux album, Dor De Deux, was kind of really progressive, so it had lots of black metal elements in it. They've dropped a lot of the black metal elements in this, like a lot of the growling. There's one song that's got a bit of a black metal rush to it, but they've gone like really full progressive, and oh my god, it's just so beautiful and it's so full of wonder. And it's kind of like the Eastern, and it's so Romanian sounding. They're from Transylvania, Timișoara, I think, so Greater Transylvania, and it really gets this kind of mysticism in without overcooking it. And so there's just so much awe and wonder and so many beautifully catchy open-ended, open-air moments, a lot of incredible sort of rhythms and grooves. They're just like a flower opening up, and it's just such a wonderful, expressive, cinematic, majestic record. It's like total blue skies thinking with a real sense of its own culture and history, and really in the moment and really in the present now, and just being lost in just wonder. I'm just lost in wonder at this record.
I find it quite moving as well. And it's one of those ones where you have to sit down, and I always want to understand things and pick things apart and see what they are and get down to details, and I can be quite binary about things, whereas Jonathan, you're more fluid about things, and this is definitely one of those more fluid records where I listened to it and thought, I just need to sort of let it come to me and go into me and go into my ears and my brain and just kind of enjoy it. But having said that, I did want to try and pick it apart a little bit, because that seems to be my natural instinct. So I went online, and they've got a lyric video for their first song, and they made some really interesting comments, and they said that they are providing translations for their lyrics for the first time, and that they're going to put translations up of their new songs on their website soon. And I thought it was quite interesting, because they were talking about how it was quite challenging to make them work and convey the meaning so it wouldn't get lost in translation, because in the Romanian language they had this poetic aspect that's really difficult to convey. And you can hear that in the music already without knowing about the lyrics, but I found that really interesting, just in terms of metal bands and metal bands from other countries, and who chooses to sing in English and who chooses to sing in their native language, and how when people do sing in English and not their native language, there is usually something lost or compromised, or the songs are written differently to accommodate it. And it's always fascinating to see kind of which band chooses which approach and how that plays into them as a whole. So I thought it was really interesting that they sing in Romanian, but beyond the music, they obviously do feel like they sort of want to provide translations for people and kind of want to give people another way in. And I watched the lyric video for the song Descent, and it was still really complex, and I still thought, oh, I probably still need to stop deconstructing this and just try and understand it on another level, because it's still really hard to work out.
Yeah, but a lot of the stuff they did in Noguru Banja, and I'm sure the stuff he's done in Dordido as well too, was kind of written to kind of mimic natural cycles. There's a lot of Romanian mythology in the music and folklore, and a lot of Romanian folklore is about kind of portals to other realms. So, you know, they open at a certain time. So there's a lot of Romanian mythology about that, and this does feel like your third eye is being opened to this other kind of realm, but from a really human perspective. You know, it's not, like I said, it's there's mysticism, but it's not wafty mysticism. It's really kind of battened down in the grooves and the way the songs unfold, and yeah, it's glorious.
The name is actually about uniting the soul and the spirit, something yeah, around that, which is quite, again, difficult to translate, and that does make sense.
There yeah, you go. Doesn't get more higher praise than that. Spell the name one more time, Jonathan.
Dordeduh, and that's out on May the 14th as well too.
We didn't spell awesome. Tetrarch, and that's quite hard.
Yeah, good point. If you want to go see Tetrarch, Tetarch. I feel like that's a little bit.
I don't think you spelled that right. I think you missed out on R.
No.
Did I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you spell Tetrarch.
Tetarch.
Oh yeah, I did. Fuck. Oh,
you
my
failed
God.
The Metal Hammer spelling bee. No prizes for you.
It's okay. Don't worry. I don't have to write for a living or anything. That will do for this week, I think. A load of great albums that are either out now or out very imminently. Cannibal Corpse with Violence Unimagined. Evil, Hell Unleashed. Grave Miasma, Abyss of Wrathful Deities. Tetrarch as well. And Dordida also. I mean, that just
yeah,
covers...
the album's called Har, H-A-R.
Right, that's a bit easier. if you don't like at least one of those, we do listen to this podcast. Thanks very much for joining us. As always, we'll be back next week. Stay safe, everybody. And yeah, be good to yourselves. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.